Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 2014 Texas Conference for Women. I'm Cynthia Rubio, the founder and president of Radiant RFID, and I'll be your host for this session. It is because of the Texas Conference for Women and an organization called Count Me In that Radiant RFID has grown from bootstrap beginnings to being a thriving and capable technology company right here in Austin, Texas. Today, Radiant's innovative solutions help large-scale organizations locate over $4 billion in material assets. As a woman-owned company, Radiant is proud to support this conference and to continue to promote the advancement of women in business and technology, and I welcome you all here today. Our session topic this morning is turning your dream into reality, a concept that I am very familiar with. As I recall sitting here as an attendee 7 years ago, wondering and learning about how I could make the future that I wanted a reality. I'm fortunate through this conference and other conferences that I have attended to have met many people who have helped turn my personal vision for the future into a reality. And I really look forward to today's panel discussion. I'd like now to introduce Jessica Bacall. Jessica directs the Wortel Center for Work and Life at Smith College, an independent women's college in Massachusetts, with students from every state and from 60 countries around the world. Her center's programs teach leadership skills, life skills, stress reduction and reflection, asking students to think about questions like, what is your story? Where have you been and where are you going? What matters to you? What skills will help you to pursue what matters? What do you do if you don't know the answers? Bacall's first book, Mistakes I Made at Work, 25 Influential Women Reflect on What They Got Out of Getting It Wrong, emerged from her experiences with students and from her own steep learning curve as she transitioned into higher education. Her book has received praise in the New York Times, Fast Company, Forbes, Elle, the Globe and Mail, and other media sources. Please join me in thanking and welcoming Jessica Bacall.
Thank you. I'm going to turn this, hopefully this is on.
Hi. Okay. So we're all really excited to have you here. If you're just coming in, that's okay. You can just find a seat. And before we get started, the panelists are going to introduce themselves, but we thought it would be nice to just for us to get a sense of who you are. So come in. Would you stand up if you are in high school? Awesome. Okay. You can sit down. That may make my next question unnecessary. Stand up if you're in college. Okay. Great. And what colleges are you from?
Texas State.
Awesome. Awesome. Any other colleges?
She's in college.
I'm in college.
Yeah, and Megan's in college. Okay. So here's another one. Stand up if you ever wished something was available, an opportunity or a product for girls or young women or young people, and you didn't see that available. An opportunity or a product or something I forgot to put in this. Okay, awesome. That means you all have amazing ideas, basically, that have not been thought of, and no one's doing them. So this is great to have you all in a room together. So stand up if you ever had an idea about how you might solve that problem and make that product or opportunity available. Don't be shy. Pretty amazing. Okay, good. Maybe we'll hear some of these ideas at the end. Stand up if you've ever had anyone say to you about any idea, that's a great idea. some new idea that you had about something. That's a great idea. You should do that. Okay, you can sit down. Just two more. Stand up if anyone's ever told you you're too young to do that or you're too inexperienced. Oh. All right. Thank you. And now, last one. Stand up if you already have a question for one of our panelists without even having them introduce themselves. Stand up if you already have a question. Okay, so some people have already read the bios and they already have questions. So we'll make sure that we have time for your questions at the end, and we'll be also interested in hearing the ideas that you bring with you to this, the opportunities and products that you think should be available but aren't, and the ways that you're imagining already solving those problems. And we just congratulate you on being here. This is really great that you took the day to be here, that your school sent you, or and we are really happy to have you. So my first question for the panelists, so each panelist here saw a problem that you wanted to solve, to help solve through starting your organization or business. And I wondered if, in introducing yourself, you would tell the story of that process from seeing the problem to making the decision to try to change it. And Kimberly, do you want to start?
Sure. Hello, everyone. Good morning. So my name is Kimberly Bryan, and I'm the founder and executive director of a nonprofit organization called Black Girls Code. And our goal and mission is to teach girls primarily from underrepresented communities about computer programming and technology. And we do that by hosting these workshops and classes and mobile app development, web design. We do robotics. We really do everything, graphics, arts, that teaches about technology and how to become a really key player and leader in technology. So my story in terms of how I began this organization is it really was not planned. So I was really having a very successful career in the biotech industry, and my degree is in engineering, and I had been in industry for years and years and years, over 20 years. And I wanted to come out of corporate America and start my own business. And that's where I started to do a lot of work and meeting people and networking, because I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. I just know I wanted to do a startup. So thinking of like what you might have seen, the movie The Social Network with Facebook. Well, those people like live all around me. And so I was like, I want to start one of those companies too. And, you know, that's what I was focused on. But one of the things that I noticed when I was out doing a lot of this networking is that very much like that movie, I didn't see too many women. I didn't see too many people of color. I didn't see too many African-Americans, Latinas that looked like me in all these places that I was going. And I was like, this is insane. I was like, why are there no women in these rooms? You know, why are no women starting companies in tech? And it just was odd to me. And at that same time, I have a daughter, have one daughter. She's a middle schooler. She was a middle schooler then. She was 12. She's now turned 15, but she was doing something at home that was driving me crazy at the same time. And she was playing video games like nonstop, World of Warcraft. Before she started doing that, she's like Dungeons and Dragons kid. She was like always on this. I'm telling you, we have like Game Boys, we have DS, we have every version of all this outdated now stuff. She says she wants a new one now. This is how she spent her time, and I was trying to get her to be productive on the computer, but I never thought she would be an engineer like her mom. But she was like, yeah, I want to do gaming. I want to do a game tester. And when I took her to a workshop, she fell in love with being a game designer. So it really like opened up her mind that she could create some of these games that she was playing. But the same thing I saw there is that there were not many girls in her summer camp, not like three out of a class of like 40 boys. Nothing wrong with boys, but at 12 years old, she did not want to be in a classroom with like 40 boys. And although now she probably would. But I really didn't want her to stop. You know, I didn't want, and especially in middle school, you know, boys can be a little bit brutal, especially in play. And I wanted her to continue to do her dream. I wanted her to see that there were other girls like her that was interested in some of these geeky things. And that's what really drove me to found this organization. It wasn't planned. I didn't want to start a nonprofit. I wanted to start a company for myself, but I also wanted my daughter, who's now, like, you know, many of you high school students, she's really, you know, starting to live her life and follow her dreams, and I wanted to make it a little bit easier for her to do that. And that's why, you know, I founded this organization, to really get other girls like her excited about technology. So, long story, but that's it.
If you just came in, this is Kimberly Bryant. She just introduced herself and talked about her organization, Black Girls Code. And I'm the moderator, and I've asked each person to talk about the problem that she wanted to solve through starting her business and to introduce herself in the process. So welcome to those who just arrived.
Okay. Hi, my name is Megan Grassel, and I'm actually from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where it's about 30 below zero right now. So I'm happy to be in Texas. But I started a company called Yellowberry that is a bra company for girls. And the reason that I started this company is I have a younger sister who was at the time 13, and I took her shopping to buy her very first bras and was sort of appalled at sort of all of the options that were available for her and for girls her age. And when I say that, I mean that everything that was available was just padded, push-up, advertising to grow two cup sizes. And I have this vivid memory of her walking out of the dressing room when I just wanted to cover her up. I was like, oh my God, you're my baby sister. You can't wear any of this. And so I sort of had this epiphany where I was like, okay, tween girls, this age group of like 10 to 15, 9 to 14, really need another option of just comfortable, colorful, fun bras that you put on, you go to soccer practice, you go to school, and there just weren't any available. And so I decided that if no one else was going to make them, then I would make them myself. I have no experience in sewing, in pattern making, or anything, and I was also in the midst of my junior year in high school, which it seems many of you are in that age group as well, so you're, you know, there's a lot going on, you're really busy. But it was sort of an idea that I couldn't really let go of. And so I worked with a seamstress in Jackson where I live to kind of go through the pattern making process. And I brought in my sister and her friends after school to like try on the prototypes and we would tweak things. And then I got a couple of samples that I was pretty happy with. And I reached out to some manufacturers that are, you know, via Google, I found them, sort of in the California area. And they were able to do some very small runs for me. And so I received my first batch of bras January of this year. And then I got to a point, you know, I was just selling them through my website. And my parents were really supportive, but I needed to raise some funding. And they were like, you know what, Megan? We love you, but you're on your own. And so I started a Kickstarter campaign to raise $25,000. And that campaign went a little bit viral. And the goal was actually met in a 24-hour period. And raised almost $45,000, I think, which in the big picture, I'm feeling there's so many other successful companies that have gone through a Kickstarter, but it was really incredible at the time, and that really solidified, too, that, you know, it was so much more than just a bra company for girls, but it was sort of this movement of, like, empowerment and positivity for young women that I've become really passionate about, That's how Yellowberry started.
Amazing. And now you just did a big deal with American Eagle. Is that right?
Yeah. So coming this spring, I think it's actually be more spring too. So in March, there's a line of Aerie for Yellowberry bras. So for the girls in here, if you guys shop at Aerie of American Eagle, you can check out some new upcoming bras that we did and designed with them.
Amazing.
I'm very excited about.
Allison.
My name is Allison Brushhaber, and I'm one of the owners and founding partners of a company called Hail Mary. We have some of the product in the back of the room here, and Hail Mary is a mostly organic ingredients, and it's a healthy snack food brand. The founding part of it and what we kind of had seen, there's three of us ladies who are the ownership group, and the original idea was conceived by my business partner, Susan O'Brien, and she actually started doing some experimentation with some recipes in her home, and she had gone to Hawaii and met a lady named Renee Liu who was into the raw foods lifestyle. She was turning 40, and she kind of, as a present to herself, said, I'm going to go and just eat raw foods for, like, at least a while. And so she did that, and then she went back to Texas. She lives in Dallas, but she went to school here in Austin, and she, you know, early on was going to Whole Foods all the time when she was a student here in Austin, and always, you know, had a healthy lifestyle and, you know, did a lot of yoga. And so she kind of notioned this whole thing. She had been a designer, and then she stopped working and had three boys. And when she wanted to get back into work, she didn't really want to go back to corporate America and kind of a little bit of a male-dominated business with architecture and whatnot. So she said, you know, I think I'm going to make a couple of these recipes, and she started experimenting at her house. And she took the lady who had been taking care of her kids and said, well, I'm going to show you how to make these recipes, and then I'm going to go out and see if I can get some business. So she did that, and she got like a health food store in Dallas, and then she got four Central Markets, and that's how it started. And then she had some discussions with Whole Foods, and by this time, Lorraine, who was the very first employee, had recruited her sister, Paula, because they literally, we just bought bags on the internet, and then put, you know, stickers on them and put the food in there by hand. And literally it was like a stainless steel bowl and a spatula. And, she had a few recipes. So when she started the discussions with Whole Foods, it was like, well, I think I'm kind of onto something, but I'm going to need some help. So she, was trying to write a business plan. And she contacted Sarah, who's currently our CEO, who has like 20, 30 years in the agribusiness and had been on lots of different boards of directors and worked for companies like Pizza Hut, PepsiCo, and, you know, Burger King, Grand Met, and had lots of corporate experience. And she said, you know, I'm going to have you help me raise some funds and get a business plan going. So Sarah started working with her just kind of as a consultant, and then she's like, wow. You know, people, this is really good product, and it's really, you know, right on trend, because we're gluten-free, and, you know, we use only non-GMO ingredients. And so then she's like, well, we need to get out of this, you know, pool cabana. This is not really legal. You can't make food in your house and sell it. So, you know, you can't really get more stores, because the more stores you get, the more exposure you get. And some, sooner or later, somebody's going to go, where is this stuff being made? And let me introduce you to, you know, Allison Brushhaber. So Sarah and I had known each other in the industry. I am a chef and a food scientist. And I had worked in corporate America designing menus and designing products and worked with a lot of different manufacturers. And so I took a lens. At first, the mission was, we'll just see if we can make more stuff while we're still in the pool cabana. And I'm like, well, you're using a bowl and a spatula. I've got a KitchenAid at home. Let me bring that in and see if we can increase production. And because it's like you can make a batch of batter in, like, you know, a couple minutes instead of, like, 5 or 10 minutes, because then they were hand-scooped with, like, a little ice cream scoop and then hand-put in the package that was hand-labeled. And then Susan would come and get the product and literally put it in a grocery sack and put it in her car and drive it to the stores. But then we started blowing power in the cabana, because we were now had the dehydrators, because we are a raw foods manufacturer. And what that means is that you never heat anything above 115 degrees. So the macaroons that are in the back, they're all, you know, low temp dehydrated, so that the beautiful oils and the almond flour and whatnot don't get oxidized. So there was a real purpose to all of this. And so the three of us decided to be business partners. And in 2008, we formed this company, and we did land Whole Foods as one store, and they're very supportive of local, and so they were extraordinarily supportive. I can't say enough positive things about Whole Foods. And we were successful in quickly getting out of the pool cabana. And we, I had a person that I knew who had a manufacturing facility. I think she's actually at this conference. Her name is Ann Conley. And she had a business, called Canyon Foods, and she made like sauces and things. But, and in my consulting role, I had been working with her, and I noticed she had this whole big room that wasn't being used in her manufacturing facility. So I'm like, do you think you'd rent us that room? So that's what we did. We moved into somebody else's manufacturing facility, and then we did that for a year, and then we got our own place where we leased a – it used to be a Domino's kind of manufacturing facility. And, of course, we're gluten-free, so we had to totally de-glutenize it. We did that for a couple of years, and we've just recently moved into our own 38,000-square-foot facility. So we've grown and grown. We're in about 3,000 stores now. We went national with Whole Foods, and we're in places like Sprouts. We're just now getting into HEB. We're on Virgin Airlines. We're in Omni Hotels. And it's been an amazing journey to grow and grow. And one of the problems that we were trying to solve is there really wasn't really good-tasting gluten-free foods. A lot of it was made with, like, xanthan flour and rice flours, and they were highly refined, so not a great amount of nutrition. And we were trying to provide, I refer to it as clean-label products. For my own personal story, you know, I've been in corporate America and restaurant chains for so long, and both Sarah and I had the same reaction, who's our CEO. We saw the movie Food, Inc., and we both cried. It was like, what have we done to the food supply that have made these chickens be so enormous and to do this kind of thing? And it's kind of a reversal of our karma to try and do something better, because I can't go back to that.
Thanks, Allison. So if you just came in, we have people who have started companies here related to food, related to fashion for young people, the garment industry, and coding. So raise your hand if you're someone who cooks, who has an interest in cooking. And, okay, you can put your hands down. Raise your hand if you've ever tried to sell anything that you've cooked. Okay, great. Raise your hand if you do any sewing. Like if you – fabulous. Okay. And have you ever tried to sell anything that you've made? Yeah? Okay. Awesome. And what about coding? Has anyone – oh, great. Okay. That's terrific. Okay. The question I have now you know, I think a lot of times when we have dreams or things we want to do, it makes a big difference for those to be reflected back to us as possible. It's really encouraging when, you know, a friend or an adult or, you know, just someone you respect reflects it back to you and says, yeah, you could do that. And then it can be pretty, can feel pretty horrible when people say, no, you can't do that. And it can make you feel sometimes like they're right, even though they might be completely wrong. So I'm interested to hear from this group, you know, what was it like when people didn't reflect your dreams back to you as something that were possible? And what did you do? And then, you know, who mentored you and told you, yeah, this is an amazing idea? You want to start?
I'll start. I think that the biggest challenge that I've had so far has definitely been my age. I'm only 19 now, and when I started with this idea and I was, you know, just sort of going around Jackson because there are some apparel companies and things that are based where I live, and I was like, look at this prototype. It's so awesome. This is my idea. This is what I want to do. And the first woman that I ever spoke to was like, she put her hands on my hands on the table and was like, oh, honey, you need to finish high school first before you think about any of this. And I was so just like deflated. Like, I didn't know what to think. And I just got so mad. I was like, you're wrong. This idea is awesome. I really want to do this. And after that, I think, as a young person, I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but oftentimes, like, your ideas aren't necessarily taken seriously. At least that's definitely what I felt when I was like, look, this is my business plan. Yes, it's not great, but it's here and I'm improving on it. But every person I sort of talked to and, you know, became more real for me, and my, you know, elevator pitch got a little bit better, and it was kind of like, okay, you know, this girl isn't kidding around. She really wants to do this. But that's still something that I face now. I mean, as you mentioned, like with the American Eagle, like negotiating a contract with lawyers. Like, I've been to high school. I take Russian history and calculus. Like, I'm not, there's no roadmap, I think, when you start your own business or your own nonprofit, mm-hmm. I assume. And so overcoming the age obstacle, which hopefully I've done some of that now, I think it's definitely been my biggest challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and a bunch of people here earlier said that people had also said to them, you're too young to do that, right? Raise your hand if you're one of the people who people told you you're too young to do some idea you had. Okay. So people can relate.
I'm impressed with y'all. on a personal note, I started my career when I was really young. I was a chef and I was a female, and that was unusual at that time. And fast forward, when we've been doing this business, we've actually been really, really blessed with a lot of people who have encouraged us. And I'd say that, you know, listening to your story, like you're too young, for us, it's can you really do this? Does this really make sense? Do you have enough money to do it? And I think as entrepreneurs, that's one of the questions that you always have to answer. Impressive that you, you know, got that that money for the startup. But
Yeah, I would just add to that. I think for me, starting out as an engineer, it was difficult being a very young person and working with folks that were mostly men and most of the time old enough to be my father or grandfather. So that was difficult. But I think it also really helped, and it helped me to have folks that encouraged me, but to also be really self-confident. And so that's kind of what really stuck out for me in listening to Megan, is that she has this, she probably doesn't realize it, but she does have, she's like extremely self-confident. And, you know, just being able to say, no, I'm going to do this, that also displays for me like a lot of grit. And I think as young women, when you're trying to go towards your dreams, you have to really be self-confident and have self-confidence in yourself. And then just develop this grit that no matter what anybody tells you that you can't do, you're going to do it anyway. And trust me, if you do that, I don't care. Get advice. But when you have your mind set up, you just find the ways, the steps to make it happen. It will take you so far in life if you do just that. Take the advice, but then do it anyway. That's what I would say.
Thank you. And something to add, I mean, I don't think I've been a very confident person, but going through Yellowberry and, like, mm-hmm. developing that grit, finding something that you're really passionate about, gives me so much confidence that I didn't have had you spoken to me a year ago.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a great lesson. Yes. I think that, you know, on our journey with Hail Mary, the three of us have gone through so much stuff. And, you know, trying to start out, and, you know, we've grown really, really fast, and we're actually the manufacturers. And so, you know, building new places and having to move into buildings and hiring people and all that comes with it. But, you know, you do. It's kind of like you're like, well, what do I know from a lawyer? But, you know, you figure it out, and then you go, you know, I did that. And sometimes, you know, I sometimes say, you know, you got your head down and you're just like doing whatever's in front of you. But once in a while you get your head up and go, man, I did that. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like 5 years ago, we were like in a pool cabana, and now we're like a 38,000 square foot manufacturing facility. And we've got a truckload of product or two going out the door every week. And it's like, we did that.
Right. Mm-hmm. I relate to that as well, because as I mentioned, I wasn't trying to start a nonprofit organization. I was trying to do something, start a business, and I didn't know anything about building a nonprofit organization. And I just was determined by this passion to do this because it's going to help my daughter and other girls. And I think that's the biggest thing, is just being taking a risk to just do it. You know, the first step is often the most difficult, but you learn as you go, because you don't know what you don't know until you don't know it. You're sitting at a table with lawyers, but you'll figure it out, you know, and there'll be people that step up to help you. But you got to take the first step.
I think that's a really good point. Like, And I was in business and corporate America for a long time earlier in my career, and one of the things as an entrepreneur that I've learned is what you were saying. There's so many people out there who will step up and help you, and one of the things that you really do need to do is you need to articulate, what do I need? And you need to, mm-hmm. to vocalize that. And it does start with a vision, like you had a vision, mm-hmm. like I'm going to do this, but, you know, you found a manufacturer who's going to mm-hmm. make it. You found a designer who's going to help you, and you have to articulate, I need this. Mm-hmm. I need a lawyer. I need a finance person. I need somebody who can help me with this. And you will find them. And the thing that's really neat is there's a lot of people who will help you out and go way beyond. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, because they believe in what you're trying to do and they get mm-hmm. inspired by your own confidence. You know, I'm trying to do this, you know. And that's a neat part of the process.
And if you think that this is just far in the future for you, I mean, you can be practicing these skills already. I mean, for example, if you are in high school, you know, and you want to take a class, you think it's going to be too hard for you, you know, thinking about, well, who could you ask for help with that class, you know, or in applying for colleges, you know, oh, it's going to be hard to, you know, I don't want to apply for things out of state because, you know, I don't know about that, you know, who could you ask? There are people out there who want to help and guide you and, you know, help with things like, you know, writing your college essay, like a nightmare, you know, like yeah. no one likes doing that kind of thing. But there, if you really seek it out, there's people who want to help and who get a lot of satisfaction out of helping. And like the worst thing someone can say is no. So it's always worth, like, if you have a teacher who, you know, it's really great practice in being brave, basically, and in like practice, you know, gaining entrepreneurial skills. If you like go to your history teacher and say, like, I wrote my college essay and I was wondering if you might be willing to read it for me and give me some feedback, you know, and that kind of brave, that's like the bravery you can practice right now. Yeah. So, you know, I think we all have to work on these muscles all the time. Like, it's hard to put yourself out there. But the kind of putting yourself out there that you need to start a business is kind of, it's the same muscle that you are using now when you seek out help, you know, whether you're in high school or college or anything else.
And I'll just, it gives you such a great sense of satisfaction too, like once you do put yourself out there. For example, the woman that I mentioned that like put her hands on me and was basically like, no, honey, this is a bad idea. I'm now in her same office building and I pass her on the way to work every morning. it's one of the greatest senses of like, I did this and you told me like I couldn't and I did and you're wrong and I'm right.
is her attitude changed?
She doesn't say that much to me.
But a lot of times I think, you know, we feel like we need to do things alone. And, you know, you can hear people talking about colleagues and the lawyers who helped. I mean, starting a business, there's more than one. I mean, these are the heads of their businesses, but there's a group that helps you move through the process. And I think it's just important to think about that, you know, you're not alone and that it's really great to reach out to other people. And that's how any kind of venture gets started and moves forward. I would love to maybe take questions from people out there.
Yeah.
Who has questions? Yeah.
Me? I was guessing the only one with a nonprofit. So, a nonprofit organization is very much like a traditional business, which is a for-profit business and generates income and revenue. But we don't really generate income and revenue for profit purposes. Our organization is focused on all of any money or revenues that we make goes back into the work that we do. So as we raise funds from funders, we receive grants from corporations. So like Google, Facebook, Microsoft, those are some of the companies that sponsor like our organization. But the funding that we get is to help us to reach more girls, to host more classes and workshops, to get more equipment to our students, to teach the classes that we do. So that's what it means by nonprofit. But it's just, trust me, every day it's just like running a business. It's just like the same amount of work, even though some of my for-profit friends don't think so. It really is. But the work is really focused on a social mission and all of the income that we generate goes back into reaching more students, helping more students, and continue to drive the mission forward.
And Kimberly, just for clarity, so that includes salaries. Like, if you're working there, you're not volunteering.
No. I volunteered in the beginning because we were grassroots, and so we did not have money in the first year. So it was just myself and some of our interns that we had, and we just we were committed to doing this work. And so there was at least a year when we didn't take a salary. So it took us a while. It's been 3 years now. And we do have, I do make a salary, and we do have other people on our team, that are also paid just like a normal business. But, the business itself is solely focused on this social impact mission.
Mm-hmm. For you too. Mm-hmm. So I actually started a Girls Who Code Club at my high school. And, it's running really well and I'm excited about it. But, one thing that we've had a problem with is, we all know, there's that stigma against girls coding. Mm-hmm. And so how do you tell them to come to a Girls Who Code club when it's called Girls Who Code? How do you get them interested in that first step to come to the club?
Well, one of the things for us that we do, for example, we had a workshop last Saturday and we had about 115 girls that attended. So we have huge. That's average for us. We have 50 to 100 so girls. But we start early. So the benefit for our organization is that we start at 7. I know the Girls Who Code starts at high school, so it's a little bit harder that way. Because our numbers drop off the cliff when we get to high school age. So you have to make the event, I hate to use the word seem cool, but you have to kind of meet girls where they are. So instead of maybe inviting them to the very first event being your code club session, go do something else. Make it a mixer where you're just going to invite the girls to come and talk to the girls, other girls in the club, as well as invite some really amazing entrepreneurs that are women that they can relate to. So Megan. So okay, come talk to our girls. Things like that are women that work at some of the companies, tech companies in your area, so that they can see that it's not just a boys only thing and it's not something that girls don't do. So for girls at that age, you gotta show and not show them first sitting down at a computer. You know what I'm saying? So make it a more social thing just so that they can understand what it's all about. Because by the time you get to high school, if girls are not really into tech, we just don't seem to think that it's for us. So you got to break down that cloud of not knowing what it is. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Did you have a question?
Yes. Yeah, please feel free to go up to the microphone, then everyone can hear.
On? Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, my name is Imani. I'm a 16-year-old entrepreneur, and I have my own business. And Miss Kimberly, I can relate because I build websites. So coding is my forte. And Miss Allison, I am gluten-free, for real, not the fake gluten-free. So my tummy and my mouth, thank you. And Megan, I have been a fan, and you did go viral. It was all over my Facebook, so congratulations. And my question is, in 5 years, where do you see yourself, and what goals do you have for each of your companies?
That's a great question.
That's a very good question.
Congratulations to you.
I know.
Yeah, awesome.
I'll make mine quick. I say for 5 years for Black Girls Code in our organization, we want to just expand and really be in more locations and more cities. So we're in 7 now, and we've reached about 3,000 students. But we want in 5 years, we want that number to be 15,000 students and be in at least 15 cities. So we're moving very quickly to expand and be in every city that we possibly can in the U.S., as well as just start moving outside the U.S. So we have a Joburg chapter, but we're opening up a chapter in Uganda before the end of this month. I really want to go to London because, I love London. Mm-hmm. And we've had people request, but just to see our organization grow and reach more students.
I think in terms of Yellowberry, my goal from the beginning has not... yes, it started with bras, but I think, the bigger picture is sort of the over-sexualization of young girls. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes beyond just bras. I think that's really tween apparel. And so my vision is to really expand kind of horizontally into that, tween apparel. market, especially because the options for girls' clothing is often similar to what I saw with the bras, although they're not quite as risque. And so that's sort of where I see Yellowberry headed.
With Hail Mary, we have started out in what they call in the food business in the natural food section, and we, you know, started out with Whole Foods, and then we went into Sprouts and Vitamin Cottage and lots of independents here in Austin, like People's Pharmacy and places like that. And so that's kind of the market that we started in, and we're just starting to go into places like HEB, and in the world of food, they call that kind of crossing over into more of the mainline grocers. So we'll continue down that path, and getting into food service is just another, you know, you kind of categorize different ways in which you expand your business, and it's almost like starting another business. You have to really think it through and say, okay, now we've got penetration in this segment and we're going to go into another segment. So in the food service segment, we started out, we're on Virgin Airlines and they do some things, and we're in like Omni Hotels. They'll put some of our product on the pillows. And so there's other opportunities in that segment. But one of the things that I've learned is that we were talking about this the other day. It's like, it's not what you say yes to, it's what you say no to. And when you're starting out, it's really easy to go, wow, you know, now they want me to, somebody called me and said, let's do this. And it's like, you really have to think it through and say, do we have the resources to do that? Do we have, you know, you really want to think through your business strategically. We were really fortunate to have probably one of the best strategic minds that I've ever worked with, who's our CEO, Sarah Chapin. And she's on lots of different boards of directors, and we're really fortunate that the three of us all have unique skills. But the discipline to have a strategy and say, what am I going to do, and then let's fill this out before you go into another segment, because sometimes people get derailed because they try and go into too many things and they're not very focused.
I just want to say one quick thing. I love that piece about Allison and learning to say no. I think we went through that as well, and having this exponential growth really quickly, and now finding ourselves at a point where we have to say no to things. We can't do every event. We can't do every partnership. We can't go to every single city, and being really strategic about how we are growing as an organization, even as a nonprofit, is really setting us up for to be a more successful and sustainable organization. But it took a while, you know, it took us a good 2 years, 2.5 to understand that, oh, yeah, we really need to be a little bit more conscious of, and be more deliberate in the decisions that we make. Mm. So I love it.
Who here has ever worked on say, like, felt like they wished they could say no, but they couldn't? Yeah. I think a lot of times that's something for women and girls that it's important to work on, to think about that, you know, it's okay to say no to people when they're asking you to do things or asking you for things. And just something, it's something good to think about. Yeah.
I was wondering how important you guys think it is for girls to go to college before going straight into their careers.
Okay, so I'm going to college, but I haven't gone yet. I'm going to a school in Vermont, and I'm starting a semester late already, and I think one of the biggest challenges I've had is, like, do I really need to go to college to continue with Yellowberry? And honestly, I think that the answer is no. That being said, there's a lot more that comes from college than just the education part. And one of the reasons why my parents are really pushing for me to go at least for, like, one semester to sort of enjoy being young. But the things that I've learned through Yellowberry, through starting a business, I could never, you know, I definitely didn't learn in high school. And I don't think that I could have really learned in college, because there's a lot of things that you just sort of learn on the fly. Like, you know, there comes a point where you wake up and there's, you know, 400 orders and I'm like, oh my God, how do I fill these? There's no, like, college class to be like, well, your living room probably shouldn't be filled with boxes and ribbons and bras, but it is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that kind of, like, learning by doing is, I mean, that's what I've done so far, is better in some ways, than of having, like, learned how to start a business, if that answers that.
I would like to take that one. When I was younger, I did not go to college right away. I wanted to be a chef, and I started cooking at restaurants at a really early age. And so I moved to Vail, Colorado, and I became a chef, and I became an executive chef. And then I went and traveled in South America. And I got back, and my mom said, you really need to go to college. You know, you really need a backup. You really need to have, you know, that's really hard work working in restaurants, and you need to make sure you have some skills that will carry you through, you know, in the future. And so I worked my way through college as a chef, and then I started in kind of this career of combining chefing and food science degree is what I have a degree in. And I didn't even know there was such a career to, like, create products for restaurant chains, which is what I did for years and years. But it is good to have that, and you do learn a lot, and you also learn a lot of networking and people. And what I've learned in business is that I was just actually talking to somebody who used to work for us, whose daughter's a student here at Austin, and she's talking about the network opportunities. And one of the things that I've learned is that who you meet in college and who you meet even in high school can sometimes be your best friends for life. And that you end up making contacts. You know, there's the whole sorority system. I was never in that system. But there's a lot of contacts that you'll meet, or places that you went, or things you studied, that's a commonality. And you'll get to be 40 years old, and people will go, oh, you went to such and such a school. And it's a way in which you open doors, and you learn a lot of things other than just a lot of the things you learn in the class. You learn a lot of other skills. And I think it is. My daughter actually was in here and she left, and she was working at our booth. But I insisted that she get a degree. And she turned out to work with that for a while. And now she's doing something else, and she works with our company. But I think it's great to have a variety of skill sets.
Yeah, I'm by no means, like, you should definitely go to college. That wasn't, like, what I meant when I said that. Sorry.
I agree with both Allison and Megan. I think it's really a personal choice. For me and my daughter, is pretty much a non-discussion topic, because she knows in our household she's going to go to college, even though she's a coder and she doesn't necessarily have to go to college, because she's doing some coding now that she, in a couple of years, she could probably just go straight from high school and get a job making six figures. But she knows that is not happening. And then not just because she has to go for her career field. I really believe that college was, like, one of the best experiences of my life. I did not like high school. I hated high school. I really hated it. But for me, college was great. Like, so my lifelong friends are from college. And it also just taught me, I think for me, college taught me how to learn and how to think deeply. And I think you could do that without going to school and going right into your career. But just having, you know, that span of time, 4 years, where you just have to learn. And you can learn about all these new and unique things and make all these different connections. I mean, you cannot put a price on it. It was really one of the most formative periods of my life. And it really shaped me in terms of where I am now as an adult in my career. So don't look at it as an either or. Maybe it's you do one now, then you do the other one later.
To me, also, it's the credential, right? So you might be able to write code and get a lot of money today, but you could use another analogy, like you're a really great athlete and you get to sign with a really great team, but eventually those skills won't carry you forward for a long time. And it's the credential. And that's important. As your career grows, that's really important.
And I'll just make a plug for Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. Smith, write it down. Email me. A lot of times, these colleges that are private liberal arts colleges, you would be amazed. It's, you know, people have this idea they're so expensive, but this has been out in the papers recently. It can end up being a lot less expensive to go to one of these expensive colleges because they have a bigger endowment. So they end up giving a lot more money to a lot more students. So it's really worth looking into a variety of colleges. And Smith, you know, the other thing about, and then I'll let you ask your questions, but there's you know, students from 60 countries around the world. So, you know, you're learning so much about other people, about people who are different from you. And we also have the only all-women's engineering program, which is an incredible, incredible program. It's a beautiful building. And I just love it. And I think I want you all to apply. Okay.
I have this question just for Kimberly.
Kimberly,
as a grassroots nonprofit, how did you finance it?
Oh, okay. So in the beginning, this is probably not going to be the one answer you want to hear, but in the beginning, I financed it through my 401k because I had just a corporate job. So in the beginning, I really self-financed it for a long period of time just because, you know, we really wanted to try it out. We were starting out as a pilot. But that was only for a short period. So like a little, so maybe like for first, not even quite the first year, because, you know, we got our very first corporate grant right after we finished our pilot. And we were like, surprised, we got it. And it was like Google was our first corporate partner. Well, yeah, but, you know, tech companies now are very located all over, you know, so they have tech centers all over. So it's not just, you just don't have to be in the Bay Area, but you need to look for, there's so many, there was a little bit of slump in philanthropy for the last few years, like a few years back, but it's coming back up now. So there is investment out there, and especially for good ideas. So I just really believe that a good idea is going to find the support it needs no matter what. And if you're really dedicated to making it happen, you'll find those resources. So start small. The big thing for us to be able to do that is that we really started with a minimal viable product. So we started out just like a startup would be. What was the minimum that we could do with the resources that we had? And we continued to iterate. And then we would iterate. We get more funding, we iterated. And so being able to be that flexible and just starting, getting out the gate with what you have, and then continue to find the support you need. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Hi. So this is a particularly open-ended question. It's for any of you guys who want to answer. I find it applicable to each one of your professions. But as an artist, I believe that in a creative process of sorts where it's producing goods as an expression of yourself. And I was wondering, what does the creative process mean to you, and how does this process reflect your particular fields?
And if you can keep your answer short, we need to wrap up. So.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take a small crack at it. I am very blessed that I get to do the formulations for Hail Mary. I find that to be my own personal creative expression. So within, you know, the guardrails of we're doing things gluten-free and kosher and non-GMO and vegan, it's challenging, but it's a whole process where you come up with the ideas and then you build the prototypes and then you go on.
I was just wondering, what was your biggest unforeseen challenge that you faced in starting your business or nonprofit, and how did you solve it?
Money.
Yeah.
That's good.
Money. Kickstarter.
Kickstarter for us, or not crowdfunding. Crowdfunding, we didn't use Kickstarter because I couldn't deal with the risk. But we use Indiegogo. But yeah, finding those resources.
Yeah, I think had I done it again, I probably would have done Indiegogo.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because there's no fear of not.
Exactly.
I was wondering, what is your take on looking professional? Because in our society, looking professional means makeup, having your hair done, you know, having the right jewelry. How is that working in a changing world? Like, what is your opinion on that?
Well, for me, one of the things I like about the tech field is that it's flexible in terms of, you know, Mark Zuckerberg goes to work in flip-flops and a hoodie, so, you know, we can kind of do that. So for us, it gives me that flexibility, but I like to dress up sometimes, but I don't have to dress up all the time. I can wear my Converse to work. So I think it's just up to you to find. I think it's important in being in dressing for the industry that you're in. So I couldn't wear my Chuck Taylors if I was working on Wall Street, although I would want to. But, you know, so be cognizant of that in whatever career field that you're going in, that you're probably going to have to dress for that environment. And then just kind of tailor, you know, your choices to what makes you be the best you. So don't go into Wall Street
as an attorney if you really want to wear a hoodie and your checks to work every day.
And I think especially, like, if you're starting out young, like, you kind of have to validate yourself. And so I think that a lot of that is in terms of, like, what you wear. Not that I wear, like, a suit or anything to work, but definitely just looking sort of put together.
I think that you are your own brand, and I think that you need to have that consciously. So in my corporate America days, you know, we wore suits. But at Hail Mary, we have a certain culture, and that's like anti-Hail Mary. So, you know, we wear T-shirts. And so it's about being your own brand and understanding what that is.
Great. So talk Thank to us you. More on Twitter or email us. We'd love to answer other questions that you have that you weren't able to ask.
Brian, I'd like to thank Jessica Bacall for coming here today, and she has a book signing later on this afternoon if you're interested in her book. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is really interesting.